Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
Hello, listeners of the podcast. I just wanted to switch it up. I was getting kind of tired of saying, what's up, guys? So yeah, what's up to everybody who is listening to this podcast? Today's date is October 19th. I'm Steven Masso, and as always, you are listening to Via the Source. Now, this episode is going to contain my preview for the Lions and the Dolphins matchup that will occur this Sunday. It's also going to talk a little bit about the trade that just happened between the Browns and the Jacksonville Jaguars, including Carlos Hyde and a fifth-round pick that has tremendous value in terms of fantasy football. And then I also want to talk, because I posted, does anyone have any questions? I had one person send me a question. It's my friend Nate. He is curious about what I think about the running back situation over there in Pittsburgh. So that's actually how I'm going to start it out. As we all know, Le'Veon Bell, he is holding out. He was franchise tagged, but he wants that long-term security. He wants that guaranteed money. So do I agree with what Le'Veon Bell is doing? Honestly, I cannot knock him for holding out. I cannot. And I know Steelers fans are very mad about what he is doing because he is under contract. You're supposed to do something if you're under contract, and there's definitely a lot of money there. But the way I see it is that running backs have a very short lifespan in this league. You need that guaranteed money when you can get it. Their lifespan is, what, 5 years of being in their prime? Anybody who continues to be effective beyond that point typically has a near Hall of Fame career. So it is, you know, a very hard thing to do, and especially with the rate of injuries among running backs. I mean, we saw with Earl Thomas, and he's not even a running back. He's not getting as much touches. What happened to him? He ended up losing a lot of money. So when I'm looking at the running back position especially, I could see what Le'Veon Bell is doing. So I'm not knocking him for that. But at the same time, I also have said that I do not agree with the Steelers being the one to pay him. I think there are other teams that very well would and could pay him, but I do not think that the Steelers should be the ones to do it, because I've said it before, and I will continue referring it to as such, that the running back position in 2018 very much is a luxury position. If you can afford to pay the top dollar for the good running back, then, you know, good on you. That means you are set at other positions. That likely means you have a rookie quarterback on a cheap deal. Because if you look around the league, the guys who have the elite running backs, Dak Prescott and Zeke, rookie contracts, boom. David Johnson, Josh Rosen, rookie contract, there you go. The Rams, Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, boom. You have the liberty to pay that top dollar for the best running back in the league at that situation. But then I look around the league and there's other guys who are, they're just bringing in rookies. And you look at Kareem Hunt, entered the league, now is what, a top five, top 10 running back in the league. Alvin Kamara, the same could be said about him. Sony Michel right now is having some success right now over there in New England. Kenyon Drake had some success with Miami. It seems like the running back position more and more is becoming something that you draft a rookie, you use that rookie contract, and you find the next one. And that's kind of how I looked at the situation with the Steelers, because they brought in James Conner, and James Conner has been nothing shy of great. Now, I do not think he is as good as Le'Veon Bell, of course, but the similarities are there, and I don't know if the difference between them is enough to warrant paying that much, paying the top dollar for a running back. I think that the needs could be spent elsewhere for the Steelers, and when I look at the team, I can't really tell what state they're in. I can't tell if they're in a win-now state, because there's the liabilities on defense. There's huge holes there. I see an aging quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger, someone who's likely going to retire after this season, I think. I don't know if they are convinced Mason Rudolph is the guy, so there might be a need there. Antonio Brown is in his prime, best receiver in the league, but how long is that going to last? And then you have a young Juju Smith. So it's kind of like, there's a mix between, yeah, there's still hope for the future, but at the same time, there's so many holes that I don't even know if they can win now. So I don't think they should be paying top dollar for a luxury position in Le'Veon Bell. Is Le'Veon Bell worth it for another team? Yes, but I see how Miami got in that situation with Ndamukong Suh. They paid top dollar for a luxury defensive tackle. Too many holes around the team, and there's no good that's going to be done. Todd Gurley in 2016, I believe, had a terrible season. The offensive line, the system wasn't there. He was still one of the best running backs in the league, but he needed to have that system in place to benefit him. So I don't think paying top dollar for a position that's also so dependent on an offensive line, on a flourishing offensive system, and I don't think that's worth it to me. And I can see how that could benefit a rookie quarterback like Mason Rudolph, but there are other needs. Focus on the offensive line, focus on the defense, and roll with James Conner. He's doing fine. And then if you need to, draft another running back in the second and third round. That's the beauty of the running back position. You can find talent you know, deep across the board. And honestly, if there are holes there, someone at this level in the NFL, if they're a running back in the NFL, they're going to be able to hit the hole if the line's there. So yeah, I don't think the Steelers should pay the top dollar for Le'Veon Bell. I could see a team like the Eagles doing it. You know, they have their franchise quarterback on that rookie contract. He's locked up for years. You know what you have? Sure, you can pay top dollar for Le'Veon Bell, and that would make complete sense to me. So the next topic I'm going to be going over is the preview game between the Miami Dolphins and the Detroit Lions. The Miami Dolphins are 4-2, and they will be facing the Detroit Lions, who are 2-3, in another home matchup. Miami is coming off an exciting 31-28 win over the Chicago Bears, which was led by none other than Brock Osweiler. Now, Miami is 3-0 at home, and they will look to keep the pattern going against a Lions team that has been up and down. They beat the Packers and the Patriots, but they lost against the Jets and the Cowboys. So, first things first, it is Brocktober. Brock Osweiler took over for the injured Ryan Tannehill, who sustained a shoulder injury that we are really not sure the severity of even till now, but all signs are pointing to Tannehill missing that Thursday night matchup against the Texans as well. Now, Osweiler was faced with quite a challenge. He played against the best defense in the league, did a pretty solid job on that. So let's see how this one goes against the Lions. Now, the Lions, let's take a look at them. The Lions are led by 8th-year quarterback Matt Stafford. And as you have heard me say countless times, Matt Stafford is a gunslinger, very Brett Favre-esque in that aspect. You know, Brett Favre had that touchdown record for a bit, also had the most interceptions. And some people get mad and they're like, how come you don't call Ryan Tannehill a gunslinger? Well, I don't think anyone thinks that Ryan Tannehill is a gunslinger. He makes some nice passes occasionally, but Matt Stafford's going to throw 40 times a game, have some ridiculous stats. He's not afraid to chuck it down the field, and sometimes it doesn't work in his favor. Ryan Tannehill on the other side is going to top out at like 250 yards most of the time, maybe less than that usually. A lot of check down routes, a lot of yards after the catch. But gunslinger isn't always a good thing. Sometimes it's very bad. Like, yeah, Matt Stafford could have amazing stats sometimes, but then he also has the games against the Jets where he throws 4 interceptions, and Tony Romo-esque also, where those fourth quarters crucial interceptions that kind of seal the whole game are going to happen as well. So don't think of gunslinger as this beautiful mystique that's always great. Sometimes it works against them, and it happens a lot of the times as well. So Yeah, Stafford has those games where he throws 40 times a game. They're also, you know, they're not afraid to abandon the run. So as you could imagine, that's led to some high yardage touchdowns, but a high volume of interceptions. So this season, Matt Stafford, his completion percentage, 66%, which is 12th in the league. He has 1,385 yards, 18th in the league, 10 touchdowns, which is 15th, and he has 5 interceptions. So he hasn't been doing too amazing this season so far. But since that terrible week one game against the Jets, Stafford threw 4 interceptions. In that one, he is averaging 274 yards since that per game, and he has thrown 9 touchdowns to 1 interception. So it seems to be that he is finding a groove, and that was kind of a fluky performance for Matt Stafford. Now, the running game for the Lions, it consists of Kerryon Johnson, Theo Riddick, and LeGarrette Blount. Johnson, who's a rookie from Auburn, has taken over the rushing duties completely. In week 3, he had 101 yards rushing against New England. In the following 2 games, he racked up 125 yards combined on the ground. He is by far right now the best back on the team, averaging 5.7 yards per carry, which has led to a lot of Lions fans saying, give this guy the ball more. Why are you not using him more? LeGarrette Blount, he has left some terrible memories in the minds of Dolphin fans, but this year I can say happily that LeGarrette Blount is struggling. He has racked up only 117 yards this season, averaging a mere 2.5 yards a carry. So yeah, he has been a non-factor. He will still get those red zone touches, but he hasn't looked like his usual self. He looks like he lost a gear. Theo Riddick doesn't really get too many carries, almost exclusively a pass catching back. He has that same role as James White and Tariq Cohen. As we know, Miami struggled against both of those guys, but I wouldn't say Theo Riddick is as dynamic as those two guys. Those guys, in my mind, are very underrated, very up and coming with Tariq Cohen. Athleticism on a different level. Theo Riddick is consistent. He is solid, but I would not be as intimidated as him as I was about James White and Tariq Cohen. The receiving core is one of the scariest parts of this Lion teams. It consists of Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, and Kenny Golladay for the most part. Tate and Jones have been one of the most successful duos for the past 2 years. Tate this season has taken the lead as the best receiver, as he has 2 games over 100 yards and he leads the team in every single receiving category. Now, Jones' stat line has been kind of average to lackluster lackluster, but that's how his seasons typically play out. He has some terrific performances that are just scattered throughout the season that are enough to propel him to that near Pro Bowl level status. So Miami, you know, watch out. Don't let this be Marvin Jones's incredible game, because he does always have a few of those a year where he gets 200 yards and two or three touchdowns, something like that. Don't let that be his game this season. Kenny Golladay is a team's primary deep threat. It seems like he knows one route, and it is to go deep. Now he has become more all around this season. He is getting quite a bit of targets, and he has become an actual valuable commodity for this team. Now, we look over to the defensive side of the ball. The Lions defense so far has been kind of questionable at best. The team is led defensively by their defensive back, Darius Slay, and also their lineman, Ziggy Ansah, who, I feel they're some of the more underrated players in the league. So, like the offense, consistency has been an issue for the Lions defense. In week 3, they held Tom Brady to 133 passing yards. Sony Michel couldn't get anything going as well. It was a pretty dominant performance by the Lions defense. But then they turn around, and in week 5, they surrender 442 yards and 3 touchdowns to Aaron Rodgers. So it's completely night and day. So far, they come in at number 7 in pass yards per game. So they have been doing respectable for the most part. But like I said, consistency has been a very big issue with this Lions defense. Now, stopping a run is one issue that they have. That's actually probably their biggest issue defensively. Opposing rushing attacks are having success against this Lions defense. They currently rank 29th in yards per carry. They're giving up 5.3 yards per touch. Now, most notably, the biggest performance came via Ezekiel Elliott. He had 152 yards on the ground and an additional 88 receiving in a game that the Cowboys ended up beating the Lions. So this team can be run on. Every team is, you know, having some efficiency. This could be a good game for Frank Gore if he was able to get it going. Also, Kenyon Drake. So my expectations in this one is that Osweiler has at least one interception. And honestly, I just have this feeling that it's more than likely going to be to Darius Slay because he is that good. Now, I think that Osweiler did a good job on the check down routes, on the taking what the defense gives him. But if he is put in a position where he is forced to throw it more than 10 yards, that's where I get a little concerned. That pick that he had that was nearly a pick 6 last week was a very bad decision and very poorly executed on top of that. So I could see him making a mistake a few times, and more than likely I see that happening in this one. Whether it is enough to sway the entire game, that I'm not sure about, but I do think he has at least one interception in this game. My next expectation is that Theo Riddick has over 60 yards receiving. After my seeing Miami struggle with Tariq Cohen and James White, kind of things I both expected, I think the trend in this one continues to some extent and Riddick finds some open space. I do not expect him to dominate the way Tariq Cohen did or the way that James White did, but I do think that he is going to have some room to work with and has around 60 yards, maybe even more in this one. Now, my last expectation is that I think Drake and Gore combined for over 100 yards rushing. The Lions' run stopping has been sketchy, and Miami will want to keep it on the ground with Osweiler at the quarterback. And again, this is in Miami. It's clear that the heat eventually takes a toll on these opponents. So by the end of the game, there's more and more holes opening up. So I just see that as a game where Miami is going to have the ability to ground and pound, and that's what they're going to want to do. I think they could have some success here. Now, my keys to success in this one. It's almost like my last expectation, but you have to get Gore and Drake going. I would ideally like for them to have more than 100 yards rushing combined, and I think that's going to be a key in this game because the Lions' defensive line has been sketchy. Their linebacking core has also been very sketchy. Teams have been able to run at them pretty effectively, and if the game is in Osweiler's hands and he is forced to beat this Lions team, I am not going to like the odds of winning that game. That's about as simple as I could put it. My next key to victory is don't allow the big plays. Miami has allowed the most plays of 40-plus yards this season with 7. Now, I know the philosophy here is the bend but don't break, but I don't want to rely on those red zone interceptions to win this game. Now, the Dolphins' turnover rate has been amazing, but honestly, it's almost looking too amazing at this point. So one would have to think there will eventually be some regression, and it could very well happen in this game. So keep Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay, those two guys primarily, away from making those 40-plus yards receptions, and I think the Dolphins can win the game. But if Kenny Golladay is catching like 50-yard bombs in the end zone, if Marvin Jones is making huge plays on the sideline, I don't think the Dolphins win this game. And I mentioned those two because they're the primary deep threats. Golden Tate is going to get his you know, short routes and yards after the catch and drag routes and, you know, short hooks. He's going to get his. But I just do not want to be giving up these big plays to Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones, and I think that will be the key. If I had to say who comes out as the favorites this game, honestly, I think this one's a toss-up because I think the Lions have been inconsistent. They don't present too much of a threat offensively or defensively. But just the liability with Osweiler at quarterback, I don't think a lot of people understand the severity. What I have seen during his time as a Texan and what I heard during the offseason and at training camp, it is very much a liability. So as long as we're just putting him in a position where he doesn't need to win the game, and I mean that as he doesn't have to carry us to the victory, then I like our chances. It'll be a 50-50. As long as the focal point's a rushing attack and these check down routes and he is not forced to be slinging it down the field, then that's how we'll win this game. Now, I said I'll touch a little bit about the trade between the Jaguars and the Cleveland Browns that just occurred. Carlos Hyde was traded from the Browns to the Jaguars for a fifth round pick. Now, this does have significant value both in real football and fantasy football. To talk a little bit about the real football, I think this actually helps the Browns more. They're going to get Nick Chubb, who I think is slightly more explosive, younger, and you're going to get to see what you have in him. I think that will end up actually helping their offense. Right now, Carlos Hyde is third in the league in carries with 114. So giving those valuable touches to Nick Chubb, I think could add a really explosive element to this Browns offense. I think Nick Chubb is just, you know, that athletic. But I don't think that Carlos Hyde was bad. I was actually very, very impressed what I had been seeing from him, and I could see why the Browns wanted to give him so many carries. So now he heads over to Jacksonville, another offense who would rather lean on the rushing attack. I think he will have a very similar role. I don't think it will be as it will be his role alone as much as it was over in Cleveland. I think TJ Yeldon will still be a big part in just kind of changing the pace and, you know, snatching some of the carries from Carlos Hyde. I do think this shows, of course, that Leonard Fournette's injury is rather serious and we're probably not going to see him for a while. So from a fantasy perspective, I think this boost Nick Chubb into the conversation at least for a flex play this week. I think he could be an every week starter strictly because of the volume here. So I would recommend going up and snatching Nick Chubb just because we've seen how rookie running backs do, and he has that potential to become an every week starter, especially with the volume. As for Carlos Hyde, for the people who own Carlos Hyde, you have to be kind of a little bummed out. He was in an offense where he was getting so many touches. I don't think it'll change too much for him. I think his value goes down a bit, but in terms of how similar the situations are, you have, one's a rookie quarterback, so you don't want him to throw so much, and that's in Cleveland. The other one, you got Blake Bortles. He's just not too great, so you don't want him to throw too much. So still very similar. Teams are going to lean on the ground and pound game. I would say his value goes down a bit. Now, if I have to choose between Nick Chubb and Carlos Hyde, honestly, I'm leaning Nick Chubb. I think he is going to explode and become a every week starter. I think he ends up having a really good season now that he is going to be the lone back. Duke Johnson's still there and is going to snag a few carries and still have the pass catching role. But Nick Chubb's going to be alone there as the main ground and pound guy. And I think he is going to be very, very effective. Now is how I'm going to wrap up this episode, guys. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ShadySteven, at Via The Source. And I would love to hear you guys' opinion. Ask me some questions whenever you'd like. I would be happy to answer them on the podcast. Until next time, though, I'm Steven Masso, and this was Via The Source.